That's so with that out of the way, I'll get started. So like I said, usually in the information security community, the focus of security testing are things like network switches, which process external data and provide access to private infrastructure. So compiler is not, let's say, a popular target. So let me be clear and state that our threat model is not the compiler user who's a developer. So we don't assume that the person using the compiler is malicious. But rather, we focus on if the code generated by the optimizer is correct, right? So for example, if you have a function, this is a use-style program. Essentially, what it's doing is defining a function foo, which returns x, and essentially setting that x to 2. So if you, and it's storing at location 0 in the EEM, in the memory, the value returned by 4. So essentially, you expect this to store the value 2 in the location 0, right? So, and this is what you get on the right-hand side after optimization, which is a straight and store 0, 2. So essentially, we want to make sure that it's correct code, right? And it behaves, the compiler behaves as expected. So for those of you who are not familiar with fuzz testing, fuzzing in a nutshell is essentially like this. So you, in a loop, what you do is you generate input and feed that input to the program under test. And essentially you can do it for as long as you want, but typically you won't have any gains beyond a certain threshold. So at some point you do control C or end the whole process. It's been shown to be surprisingly effective at finding bugs because most often unit tests capture a subset of program behavior, and here we randomly generate things that are usually corner cases somehow and break the program. However, applying traditional fuzz testing is limited because our use case is essentially testing the compiler. And it's very important to generate valid programs for the compiler, which means, let's say you have the valid program on the left, solidity program on the left, which defines the contract, and a function foo inside the contract that does something, right? And you apply, and the fuzzer, let's assume that the fuzzer applies a mutation. Mutation is essentially any operation which tweaks bytes, adds bytes, or removes bytes from the byte stream on the left. So you can think, so the fuzzer sees the input has a stream of bytes, so on the left, and just tweaks bytes and adds, removes. So it could create a mutation like the code shown on the right, which basically tweaks the keyword function and public, right? Because it's totally random. So you can imagine that with a very high likelihood, a random mutation at the input level is going to be simply rejected by the parser. And we don't want that because we want the program to be parsed and then optimized and then test the optimizer. So this clearly won't work, or it works, but it's not very efficient. So basically, the learning is that fuzzing a compiler requires generating valid programs. And now generating valid programs requires some sort of structure awareness. So let me talk about what is structure awareness and how we approach this problem. So essentially we start with a high-level specification. This specification is written in the interface description language called protobuf, or protocol buffers is the whole thing. It was originally developed by Google, but it's used for various purposes, also in testing. So essentially, in the protobuf language, you can define units of data as messages, and each message contains one or more fields from other messages. So for example, it's useful to talk of the specification of the U programming language that we're testing in a top-down fashion. At the very top, you have a program, so the message program, which contains a repeated sequence of a message called block, which we also define as a repeated sequence of a message called statement, and so on and so forth. So you could, although it's not shown on this slide deck, you could define a message called if statement, a for statement, so on and so forth, which contain other fields, and then make statement a union of all these statements. You could use the keyword one of to make the union of these statements. So essentially, build the specification in a top-down fashion until you have all the leaf nodes, typically literals or constants and stuff like that. And yeah, essentially try to cover as many aspects of the programming language as possible. Bear in mind that this is fully handwritten, so it's not exhaustive or complete. But for the purpose of testing, the hope is that it covers sufficient language features for us to get a sufficient assurance that things work as expected. Of course, you can find this full spec at the link below if you're interested. So the next thing is input generation. We have the spec. How do we convert this spec into a valid input? We don't generate the input ourselves. Fortunately, there is a library called libprotobufmutator, which is also developed at Google, which takes the specification shown in the previous slide deck and converts it into a valid input, which is an instantiation of the spec. So each input is essentially a tree. For example, it can look like what is shown below here. So you have, it defines blocks, and blocks contains a statement, which is an if statement in this case, and the if statement has a condition which contains a binary operation, which is an equality, and the first operand of that equality is a variable reference. The variable's ID is 0, and then the constant that it is being compared against is 0. This is the textual form of a protobuf message, for clarity. But of course, this is not, doesn't really make sense yet to feed this to the compiler, right? Because the Yule optimizer does not recognize protobuf. So we need a program that converts an instance of the protobuf message into a valid Yule program. And this is where the converter program comes in. So this is something that we have to write, but fortunately this is not too complex, and it's about 1,000 lines of code. So essentially, converter is a source-to-source translator. The input is the protobuf serialization format, and the output is the Yule program. So we talked about the protobuf message in the previous slide. How it looks like when you convert it to Yule code is shown at the bottom. So essentially, it's an if statement with a variable called x underscore 0. If it's check that it's equal to 0. Of course, this is a snippet of a larger piece of a program, so it doesn't make sense to feed this to the parser yet. But this is just to give you an idea how the conversion looks like and what it, what's the input and the output of the conversion process. But in reality, we have a complete valid program which compiles and does something. So to put these two pieces together, what we have is a specification that we handwrite in the beginning and a library called libprotobuf and mutator. We use that library to generate input, but that input is not ready to be fed yet because it's in protobuf language. So we use a program called, we write a program called protobuf converter, which converts from this language to a valid test program that can then be fed to the compiler. So finally, we have an input that could be used to test the compiler. But then testing the compiler actually requires encoding an expectation somehow. So imagine that you randomly test, randomly create a test program, but you don't know what it's supposed to be doing, what side effects it has. So how do you encode an expectation, right? So what do you check? How do you check that this it's doing the right thing? The approach that we use is differential fuzz testing. So essentially, it involves tracking the side effects of a program using an execution trace, running the program, and then running the optimized version of the program and comparing the side effects. So we use the original program as a baseline to compare against, and we compare that with the optimized program. So it's not too complicated. However, before we can do that, we need an execution trace which tracks side effects of the execution of the program, right? So we need to know somehow what is happening to check whether it is happening correctly post-optimization. And this is where the YUL interpreter comes in. YUL interpreter is essentially an interpreter for YUL programs that was written by Chris. So essentially what it does is it interprets arbitrary YUL programs. So apart from interpretation, what it additionally does is outputs the side effect of the program as a trace. A trace can be thought of as a string. So for example, you have the test program on the left, you feed it to the YUL interpreter, it executes it step by step, and then creates this execution trace shown on the right, which can look like you load something from memory from some address X, and then store it, store some value at address Y, do a data copy, so on and so forth. So we build the execution trace of the test program using the YUL interpreter. And finally, we are ready to actually like put all of these blocks together and test the optimizer. So we start with generating the program, feed it to the interpreter, optimize the same program, feed that again the optimized version to the interpreter, and then we get two execution traces, which are essentially strings, and then we can simply do string equality check, right? So if the execution traces of both these versions are equal, everything's fine as we expect. If it's not equal, there's a bug, most likely in the optimizer, but in practice we've also had situations where the bug is somewhere else, but with high likelihood it's the optimizer. So essentially, like I said, we found about this approach being pretty effective in practice. We found about 7 bugs, 2 of which were in the optimization rule that was used to essentially optimize programs. 5 were in the experimental YUL optimizer, but yeah, it's not supposed to be used by end users right now. So that's the purpose of testing anyway. 2 were in the EVM optimizer, so it was used in production, but fortunately it's very low severity. Mostly because the buggy rule in question was optimizing constant, so it was a very specific pattern that was going wrong, and this pattern could be detected visually because it's a compile time constant, or that's essentially why it was low. The others were of course in the experimental version, so that's why we're testing it. So that's what we've done. Challenges remain going forward. The main thing is we would like to find high severity bugs before the compiler ship, right? Because that's what matters. The main problem with fuzzing a compiler for correctness is that it's usually slow. It's a slow process. I mean, typically in fuzzing, you select a small piece of code that's security critical and fuzz it, which means typically you would like execution speeds of over 100 per second. But for example, if you want to test a component, we're starting to test the ABIv2 encoder inside SolidKey. The problem is that compilation is slow, and this is perfectly fine for the use case because developers can spend an additional second or so to save gas, right? The only problem is that if you apply for fuzz testing, it can become a bottleneck. So to find ways to basically make it more suitable to fuzzing is a challenge that we are currently working on. So in conclusion, we started doing continuous structure-aware fuzzing to detect problems with the optimizer and alert us whenever there's a bug in the code base. It has been so far used for mainly testing the optimizer and data end and decoding. It has decent assurance, but bear in mind that testing is not formal. It doesn't give you any formal guarantees. Take that with a grain of salt, but yeah, that's about it. Yeah. Thank you. Any questions?
So how much do you know about the coverage that you're able to get with, say, one day of fuzzing?
With one day, it's hard to say, but...
Because you said you run it every day, right? So.
Oh, but then it builds a corpus over time. So we started, and then it builds a corpus, and the same corpus is used. So you can think of it as a cumulative curve. It improves over time and then keeps increasing, essentially. So essentially, right now, as it stands, just for the optimizer, it's pretty good. It's about 93% or something of edge coverage. Yeah. Cool. And we keep trying to keep an eye on it and then see if we can improve it somehow.
And do you have an idea of what's missing? Is it syntactic features of the input language that aren't in the protocol buffer specification, or is it something else?
I believe the syntactic issues are not a problem right now. The main challenge is to keep up with language improvement. So a new language features get added, and that has to be reflected in the protobuf spec. So essentially, to keep up with it and making sure that when there's some change, that change is covered in the fuzzing process. So yeah. Maybe what is missing is to check if all branch statements inside the optimizer steps are covered at a very low level, but at a high level, it's hard to say. Yeah.
How do you decide when is an issue or not? Because you are introducing some code, so you will obtain different class codes. So when do you decide is an issue or not?
So regarding gas costs, the Yule interpreter is oblivious to gas. There's no notion of gas. It just runs code. Regarding how we decide, there's a bug file by the fuzzing program, and it has a minimized input. We try to rerun the input and check the side effects. It's pretty simple workflow, mainly because of the interpreter, so you get an execution trace which is sort of readable, and you compare the execution traces pre and post, and it's pretty straightforward. So it can quickly tell you whether it's a bug in the optimizer or there's some other code. Of course, like you said, we introduced code and there could be a bug in the code that we introduced, but it doesn't take longer than a few minutes to quickly decide which bucket it falls into.
Okay.